The first part was not too important anyway. It was just chit-chat. So today I'm talking about how the Chinese ancestors of Soto Zen came to Japan, particularly through Eihei Dogen and his teacher Tiantong Rujing. I titled this Bringing the Chinese Ancestors Home, the Influence of Chan on Dogen's Teaching. So I imagine most of you have heard of Eihei Dogen. We chant his name every Sunday in our dedication. He's known as the founder of the Soto Zen school in Japan. And at Mountain Rain, he's considered one of our ancestors, along with our great ancestor in India. How do we do it now? We just did it. Shakyamuni. You know what? I kind of changed the order here. Our first ancestor in China, Bodhidharma. Our first ancestor in the West, great teacher Shogaku Shunryu. But our first ancestor in Japan is Eihei Dogen. Now that I've thoroughly confused you with that original ordering. So one of the first questions I'll pose is, why did Dogen go to China? And I'll also ask what he learned there that he couldn't find in Japan. And then I'll try to describe some of the experiences, words, and images that he brought back to Japan and integrated into his practice and teaching there. But a bit of background on Dogen's path first. Dogen was born in 1200 of the Common Era. He was born into the noble family of Minamoto Michitomo. Although he was born out of wedlock, it seems that there may have been some father figure in his life. But it is believed that this first father figure died when Dogen was only 2. At the age of 7, his mother died, which was quite devastating to Dogen, as he was a very sensitive and precocious child. Before she died, Dogen's mother encouraged him to practice Buddhism and to figure out the great matter, or the meaning of life and death. Dogen took this to heart and turned his efforts to diligent practice. So Dogen first practiced at a Tendai Buddhist temple on Mount Hiei, just outside of Kyoto. And a few of us got to enjoy going there a few years ago. but after practicing for a number of years, and after being ordained in that tradition, he still felt that there were questions he had that no one could answer. A teacher recommended he go to Eisai's school at the Kyoto monastery named Kenenji. Eisai had studied in China to learn more about Buddhist and Zen practice and became deeply influenced by the descendants of Lin Ji, who is considered the founder of the Rinzai Buddhist tradition. Eisai had transmitted his teaching to a monk named Myozen, with whom Dogen studied. At one point, Myozen said he really wanted to go to China to learn more and to bring the authentic practice back to Japan. Dogen was ready to go, given his burning questions, his doubt about the usefulness of the koan practice, and his general disenchantment with the state of the official Buddhist administration in Japan at the time. He felt it was corrupt and they were too concerned with royal patronage and brocade robes. So what was the question that was gnawing at Dogen at this time? What was it that drove him to take this very perilous journey? It wasn't the trip to be taken on a whim, so someone would have needed to feel quite compelled. Sorry, I changed my, I edited midstream. So the question, or one of the fundamental Mahayana teachings, was that each of us are already enlightened. And the practice, sorry, editing. Dogen had received this teaching about the original Buddha nature and that each of us have Buddha nature, but he just couldn't figure out why, if we're already enlightened, do we need to practice? Practice in those days was very difficult, very challenging, not very comfortable. And so he was thinking, well, why do we have to do this? Like, we've already got this. Dogen's Dharma heir, Keizan Jokin, recounts that Dogen had asked Bishop Cohen of the Mi Monastery the reason as to why the Buddhas of the three times practice, even though they are already enlightened. Cohen's response was, what you are asking now is the most advanced question of our school, which was the Tendai in Japan or the Tiantai in China. This theme has been passed on orally from generation to generation by great masters. I cannot fully elucidate it, but I hear that Bodhidharma transmitted the Buddha seal from India to China. His teaching prevails all over China now and it is called the Zen school. If you want to have a definite answer to your question, you should enter the chamber of Bishop Eisai and ask him. You should also go to China in search of the way. So the seed had already been planted in Dogen's mind that maybe this deep question he had could find its answer in China. So Dogen went to China with Myozen in 1223 and didn't return until 1227. And it wasn't like he was the first Buddhist monk to ever go to China to learn more about Mahayana Buddhism. Buddhism in Japan had been practiced since it was first introduced in 552 of the Common Era. That's almost 700 years before Dogen was ordained in 1213. Other Japanese monks had gone to China long before Dogen to learn more about Buddhism, bring lineage holders back to Japan to teach, and to receive authorization as teachers. My point is that one would think everything wonderful about Mahayana and Zen Buddhism had already made its way from China to Japan. We have to recall, however, that this was in the days before the internet and even before television, no documentaries available. So there was likely a lot more to be learned if one were willing to go physically to the source. But this was already in the, or this was also in the days before airplanes and steamships. So the trip to and from China could be perilous unless relations between Japan and Korea were good. If that was the case, then the sailors could take the more calm route through the Yellow Sea, closer to Korea. But when relations were not so good, they would have to take a route across the East China Sea. And this journey was much more dangerous, and a lot of the ships that set sail either never reached China or never returned. And then, of course, we can't forget the seasickness. So, yeah, I think Dogen suffered from that and wrote about that in some of his writings. Dogen, nonetheless, agreed that he must take the journey with Myozen in the hopes of getting his question answered. The voyage took almost 4 months before their ship arrived in Mingchao, which is now in the province of Chekiang. For the first 7 months, Dogen remained living on the ship, only venturing out briefly to local temples while learning Chinese customs. So even though he didn't venture far in the early days, he had a pivotal encounter, which was to shape his understanding and approach to monastic practice, and which carries on to us this day. While he was living on the ship, an older Chinese monk came on board to get some Japanese shiitake mushrooms. This monk was the chief cook at a monastery that was about 85 miles away from where the ship was anchored. Dogen met the monk and asked him to stay overnight so they could talk some more. The Chinese monk, however, refused, saying he had to get back to the monastery to prepare the monk's food. Dogen asked why the other monks or cooks couldn't prepare the meal, and the Chinese monk said, "The reason for my being the chief cook at such an old age," which is 61, getting close, "is that I regard this duty as the practice of the way for the rest of my life. How can I leave my practice to other persons?" Dogen continued to ask why such an eminent monk wouldn't instead study koans or practice zazen. The old monk laughed loudly and said, "You, a good man from a foreign country, perhaps you do not understand what the practice of the way is." Dogen was shocked and deeply ashamed. Dogen's eventual understanding of this event was that enlightenment must be expressed in daily activity. This laid the groundwork for his book, known as the Tenzo Kyokan, or Instructions to the Cook. The book describes in detail the importance of work practice, particularly the work of the kitchen. Like many Zen instructions about life in the monastery, it describes how we take care of each other. It describes how the point of cooking is not just preparing food, but about how it is a practice. Food prepared with the spirit of practice is a practice of the six paramitas, or perfections, which are effort, patience, meditation, generosity, virtue or morality, and wisdom. So anything practiced in this way, whether it's cooking or something else, or whether it's inside or outside of the monastery, is the practice of enlightened action. So once Dogen was felt he was acclimatized, he went on to stay at various Chinese monasteries over the next 2 years. Although he was not entirely satisfied with what he had learned, and he hadn't felt that his question was answered, he believed his knowledge and practice surpassed anything and anyone he had encountered in either China or Japan. Keizan Jokin's account of Dogen's time in China states that Dogen felt he was matchless and was ready to go back home. His teacher at the time recommended that before he go back, he visit Ru Jing at Tiantong Monastery. There, Keizan says, Dogen's spearhead was immediately broken, which I think is maybe an old-fashioned way of saying that Dogen had become pointy-headed and proud. So who was this Ru Jing, and what did he teach Dogen that others hadn't? A little bit about Ru Jing. So Ru Jing left his home at the age of 19 and traveled all over China. He visited Zen temples and monasteries, and eventually became the disciple of a Caodong teacher whose name is, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but phonetically for me it's Cuan or Qi Qian. Then the things I read said that he went on pilgrimage for 40 years. During his career, and I'm not sure if it was during his pilgrimage or after or whatever, I don't know, he must have been really old. He was the abbot of a number of temples and was finally asked to become the abbot of a Tiantong monastery. The Tiantong monastery was known as a Rinzai monastery, and Ru Jing was Caodong, but I guess he was so renowned that he was invited to teach there. And for Ru Jing, this was just fine because he really didn't like all the divisions between the different types of Zen in China. He thought they should all be one. Ru Jing was known for his diligent dedication and his, some say, ascetic approach to Zazen practice. One story is that he devoted so much time to Zazen that the flesh of his buttocks repeatedly broke out in sores. Yet when this happened, he would only practice more earnestly. But notwithstanding this rigor, Ru Jing was also known for his utter sincerity and personal warmth. Dogen recounted an episode where Ru Jing apologized to his monks for disciplining them and asked them for their forgiveness and compassion. Dogen says, thereupon, all the monks wept. So, one more tale of Ru Jing's teaching. This is a quote from the book compiled by Andy Ferguson before I discuss his relationship with Dogen. Tiantong Ru Jing addressed the monks saying, thoughts in the mind are confused and scattered. How can they be controlled? In the story about Zhao Zhou and whether or not a dog has Buddha nature, there is an iron broom named Wu, or Mu in Japanese. If you use it to sweep thoughts, they just become more numerous. Then you frantically sweep harder, trying to get rid of even more thoughts. Day and night, you sweep with all your might, furiously working away. All of a sudden, the broom breaks into vast emptiness, and you instantly penetrate the myriad differences and thousands of variations of the universe. It's pretty inspiring stuff. So I think it'd be pretty great to study with them. So Dogen enjoyed a close personal relationship with Ru Jing, who invited Dogen to come ask him questions anytime, no formal meeting request or Dokusan required. Through their interaction and learning more about each other, Dogen felt for the first time that he had met his true teacher. Dogen admired how his teacher had not been corrupted by aspirations for worldly fame and gain, which Dogen felt had poisoned both Japanese and Chinese Zen. Ru Jing's emphasis on Zazen later became the heart of Dogen's teaching and practice. Excuse me, in fact, one of the first things he wrote upon returning to Japan was Fukan Zazengi, or the chapter also known in English as Recommending Zazen to All People. If you've been to a longer sesshin, you'll know that this is often chanted in the morning service, and it gives both practical and more philosophical insight into Dogen's practice of Zazen. So did Dogen find the answer to his question at Ru Jing's monastery? Apparently he did. So here's the story. Inspired by Ru Jing's example and teaching of the singular importance of Zazen, Dogen devoted himself to long hours of Zazen. There are accounts of Dogen having had some sort of enlightenment experience when a neighboring monk who'd fallen asleep was chastised by Ru Jing, who thundered at him. In Zazen, it is imperative to cast off the body and mind. How could you indulge in sleeping? It is said that Dogen was shaken to his core and went to Ru Jing's private quarters to relate his experience, where his enlightenment was confirmed. I put that in air quotes because I think we question the idea of sudden transformative enlightenment or some sort of instant experience of enlightenment. As Dogen probably would have heard Ru Jing teach repeatedly about dropping off body and mind. Perhaps there was a pivotal moment where the repeated teaching finally sunk in, but even so, it would also take time to fully integrate the experience to the point where Dogen could share it with others. In any case, for Dogen, Shinjin Datsuraku, or dropping off body and mind, became the answer to the question he had lived with since he lived at Mount Hiei. He understood then that Zazen was not about purifying or calming the mind so that we can eventually cultivate wisdom and achieve enlightenment. The act of doing Zazen is itself wisdom. Just as the sixth Chinese ancestor Weinang said, there is no dust and also no mirror on which it gathers. This is echoed in Dogen's Fukan Zazengi, where he says, who would make an effort to brush it, or the mind, clean? It is never apart from one, right where one is. Zoketsu Norman Fisher offers an interesting interpretation of Weinang's, Rujing's, Dogen's understanding that we are already Buddha and already enlightenment. In Norman's words, the freedom and love we're seeking already exists within us. We just need to stop seeking and sit down right in the middle of it. Dogen realized that the Buddha was already awakened before he sat under the Bodhi tree, which is why he sat. He wasn't seeking enlightenment, as that would just be some sort of accomplishment to reinforce an illusory ego. And we also need to drop all of that and simply practice. And practice as an act of devotion and not to figure stuff out or to get calm or to be enlightened. If we try to practice with an objective, whether that is to get calm or become enlightened, we are just reinforcing the mind's habit of trying to create an identity. Norman goes on to say, we should simply sit to establish and experience the feeling of being alive, just body, breathing, and consciousness. It's simple, but it's not easy. We're not doing something. We're actually receiving something handed down from the whole human past. This in itself will be a profound feeling of dropping off body and mind. Since we're already enlightened, we sit to manifest the teachers who brought us this wisdom. We become them, or we are them. There's no way to get it wrong. Just manifest your life fully. So, Dogen's experience at Mount Tiantong infused his thought and teaching from that point forward. In Dogen's Fukan Zazengi, which I just mentioned, one hears many echoes of the Chinese ancestors' teaching. These include such phrases as learn to take the backward step and shine the light inward, and think, not thinking, which is something we hear Yaoshan saying. With this perspective deeply embedded and in his teaching, Dogen brought forward a long line of Chinese ancestors, from Weining to Nanyue to Yaoshan and Hongzhi, teachers who have already been brought forward or will be brought forward in this practice period. His experience in China also helped him cultivate his existing appreciation for poetry and paradox. He had, of course, gained a deep appreciation of paradox in studying koans with Myozen, a Rinzai teacher at Kenninji. And upon his return from China, Dogen wrote prolifically using language and paradox in a masterful but sometimes maddening way. In his introduction to his and Kaz Tanahashi's translation of the Shobo Genzo, Peter Levitt recounts some of Dogen's literary techniques and describes them as partly East Asian but mostly Zen, where there's an inherent distrust in conventional language and logic. Dogen often makes an effort to crush and penetrate normal intellectual views, going directly to the source of consciousness that is reality itself, before reasoning in duality and non-duality arise. He sometimes calls this mode of communication intimate language or true expression. So does this sort of writing remind you of any of the stories or interactions that we've heard about in our Chinese ancestors? So Dogen, in fact, used the classical koans from the Chinese Zen canon, and they are peppered liberally throughout his work. And in another one of his talks on Dogen, Norman recounted a story that scholars with computers have determined that 90% of Dogen's phrases were not at all original, but were really the sayings of the Chinese Zen ancestors. And the more I read the Chinese Zen ancestors and what they said, I go, well, wait a minute. Oh, Dogen came after. And of course, the poetry that infused much of Chinese culture and Zen practice came through in Dogen's language in such writing as Genjo Koan, the Mountains and Rivers Sutra, and many others. And I can't forget about another pivotal experience in Dogen's time, during Dogen's time in China, and that was his experience of the rope chant. It was so important that Dogen dedicated two chapters in the Shobo Genzo to the robe. These two chapters are the power of the robe and transmitting the robe. In one of these, he describes his experience. Once, when I was in Song, China, practicing on a long sitting platform, I observed the monks around me. At the beginning of Zazen in the morning, they would hold up their kashayas, place them on their heads, and chant the robe verse quietly with their palms together. This was the first time I had seen putting on of the kashaya in this way, and I rejoiced, tears wetting the collar of my robe. Although I had read this verse of venerating the kashaya in the Agama Sutra, I had not known the procedure. At that moment, I saw it with my own eyes. In my joy, I also felt sorrow that there had been no master to teach this to me and no good friend to recommend it in Japan. How sad that so much time had been wasted. The power of the authentically transmitted kashaya is rare to encounter in the 10 directions. So those of you who are sewing rakusus, don't give up yet. So I think I'll finish just by concluding that I think the reason why we give Dharma talks is to try and encourage other practitioners. It might also be helpful in relieving boredom after a long day of sitting or a little bit of entertainment, but I think it's mainly to encourage. I'm no Zen scholar, and even though I try to do research for my Dharma talks and do a lot of reading and thinking, I don't think I'm going to be the person who gets a job teaching at a university about Zen, unlike some of us. So has this talk been encouraging to you? I hope so. Even if you're not coming to Loon Lake at the end of this week, we could all use a bit of encouragement. So try to remember Dogen's connections to China, his questions, his journey, and his experience. And I summarized a few points that I feel really came through in Dogen's Chinese Experience. The first one was that Dogen, just like us, faced obstacles in his practice and learning. It wasn't always calm, happy, inspired sitting. We also face obstacles, even in just coming to the Zendo or scheduling time to sit. Dogen continued to look for answers, and whatever brought us here means that we're also looking for answers, and I hope that we will continue to do so. Dogen eventually got it. And if he can, maybe we can too, with the help of wise teachers and our ancestors. Dogen came to the realization that each of us are already enlightened, although we still need to sit. So let's enjoy our enlightenment, give ourselves a break, and let go of the thought of doing it right. There's no way to do it right, no way to do it wrong. We just do. And we can also take the lessons of the Tenzo to heart in our daily activity. See if you can bring the same attention, patience, and kindness to your simple daily tasks, as I hope you do to your Zazen. In this way, you'll be carrying forward and manifesting the wisdom of the Chinese ancestors through your life. Thank you very much. So, Kate helped me with the following question that we can all break into little groups to discuss, because I prepared this talk thinking I would just like send it out into the universe. But I think, you know, when we consider what propelled Dogen to practice and what he really passed down to us through the Chinese ancestors, we can raise the question, what is it that has propelled you to practice? What is the question or issue that has come up in your life that made you look up Mountain Rain on the website or join in with this group of fellow practitioners? So that's the first question. What was it that kind of propelled you to practice? The second question to discuss is, was there a moment when the practice opened for you? Maybe not an enlightenment experience, but a moment where you felt like this was a practice you should continue. All right. Groups of what?
1, 2, 3, 4.
3? Can we try that? 3? Okay.
And if there's... There can be a group of four if there's not the
Yeah,